Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Pride Month is here, but not without controversy. For the past decade, Pride Month has meant hundreds of companies unveiling rainbow logos and Pride-themed clothing collections. More recently, however, their support of Pride has placed some businesses front and center in the culture wars. What companies once saw as a desirable demographic market has now become a political and financial liability, as evidenced by the backlash experienced by Bud Light and Target for their support of the LGBTQ community. Nalia Ordabayeva is an associate professor of business administration at Dartmouth University. Her research examines how politics interact with consumer behaviors. Welcome to All Sides.
Thanks so much for having me.
And before we jump into specific examples of what's been going on lately, can you tell us about politics and consumer behavior? Do consumers care about the politics of the companies they associate with?
Absolutely. Increasing amount of research demonstrates how consumers' political views spill over to the marketplace. Consumers expect companies to align with their political views on important issues, and they increasingly expect companies to speak up and utilize their platforms to try and make a difference on the issues that they care about.
And how do companies view that? Do companies care about the politics of their customers, or do they just care about the money?
Well, most executives that you look at actually find this to be a risky environment. And so they, if it came to, you know, to up to them, they would prefer to stay silent. But consumers increasingly expect companies to speak up. And so as a result of responding to this increasing demand from active customer base, companies are in a position to need to express their positions. And so it's a very difficult terrain for companies to navigate. And one benefit that a lot of brands are seeing of doing so is to try and build a personal connection with consumers and offer the psychological benefit and, you know, connection on these, personal views and worldviews that a lot of brands see as a sustainable way of retaining their competitive advantage. So if it comes to offering economic or, you know, functional benefits, these things can be easily replicated by competitors. And therefore, companies view the psychological benefits of connecting on personal worldviews as a way to try and retain and create a more sustainable competitive advantage in this increasingly polarized marketplace.
Yeah. So let's talk about that polarized marketplace that's increased more recently. So taking Target, for example, Target being associated with Pride and having a Pride display toward the front of their store. I mean, it's done that for at least 10 years, I would say. I mean, if not more, I don't know exactly, but let's say 10 years. But just this past year is when we saw the backlash. People were knocking down displays. They were threatening employees, and Target had to take action. They pulled some items, and they also had some stores, they moved the displays toward the back of the store so they wouldn't be at the front of the store. And they said it was to protect their employees. That's what Target said. But why are we seeing that now? For 9 years, everything seemed fine, right?
Yeah, this is a very interesting phenomenon. It seems that in the past few years, with the constellation of a number of uncertainty-inducing and anxiety-inducing events in the world around consumers, consumers are trying to find ways to retain control over their life and over the environment which they navigate, and speaking out and utilizing their purchasing power and wallets as a way to, you know, assert a bit of control in their lives has become kind of one outlet for consumers to feel safer in the world that they're living in. And so that is one of the reasons that we're seeing this greater vocal activism on consumers' parts, and trying to assert their worldviews on company expectations. And so even though companies have been very successful in engaging in these campaigns for many years without causing controversy, something in the consumer psychology, this desire to assert greater control over their life and over their livelihoods in response to this greater uncertainty in life that they're experiencing due to the pandemic and so on and so forth. This change in the consumer psychology has made this terrain a lot more complicated and a lot more dangerous and risky for companies to navigate. communicate.
So we as human beings are feeling more angsty about everything, right?
That is one of the, absolutely. That's one of the observations from research. Yes. When we feel that the world around us is more dangerous, more uncertain, we look for small ways to assert control over our lives and our wallets and how we spend our money is one of the straightforward ways to assert that control. And so kind of asserting our worldviews through our purchases and wallets is like one sure way to assert a bit more control over our lives and environments, despite, you know, in this increasingly uncertain environment. And so that creates greater pressure on companies in terms of the actions that, you know, they're able to get away with versus not.
So, but then there's the backlash the other way. So then the LGBTQ community and their supporters are saying, are mad at Target for moving the displays and giving in is what they're saying. So how does a company like Target balance that? Or is that, that's what we don't know right now.
It's a big question, and a big component of the answer comes down to the composition of the customer segment that these companies are serving. And so in these different cases that we're observing, for example, in the case of Bud Light, you know, a big reason that experts cite for kind of a longer term negative consequences that they're seeing of this backlash is because of the great composition of the customer base, you know, coming down to the type of customer who tends to be a bit, you know, on the conservative side of this particular pride issue. Whereas for a company like Target, you know, looking at a more diverse customer base that they might be serving, you know, a hard financial kind of calculation might come down to, are we turning off more people, you know, or are we pleasing more people through the various actions that we're taking? And so depending on who represents a greater portion of that base, the folks who support Pride versus not, their actions in the end might shake out, you know, in terms of longer term consequences for the firm in line with the greater proportion composition of that customer base, if that makes sense.
This is All Sides, and I'm Amy Jurevich, and we are talking about the backlash some corporations are seeing for their support of Pride Month with rainbow in marketing campaigns and what that means for companies and their interaction with politics. And we're talking with Nalia Ordabayeva, an associate professor of business administration at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. So there are other months and, you know, like marketing opportunities. We do not see this backlash toward merchandise marketed toward other marginalized groups. You know, there's Women's History Month, there's Black History Month, and we haven't really seen any outcry in, you know, women's power products. You know, there's t-shirts and that kind of thing. What do you think of that?
There's definitely differences across the nature of issues that companies speak out on in terms of the backlash and reaction, customer reaction that those might generate. Cultural issues pertaining to same-sex marriage. Other examples include, for example, gun laws, right, and so on and so forth. They tend to be more polarizing than issues that have to do with human rights, where perhaps some of the gender and racial, you know, issues might come into play, as well as economic issues that tend to generate greater consensus among the left and right-leaning consumers in terms of whether or not companies should play a role. And so the more culturally divisive an issue is, such as same-sex marriage happens to be, you know, on that side of the fence, the more risky and the more kind of backlash we might observe, you know, in response to company actions, if that makes sense.
Well, when we talk about Women's History Month and like the women's power movement, I can't think of, you know, abortion has been a very controversial issue and everyone has very strong opinions about that. So do you think that next year for Women's History Month, you know, we could be seeing this because it's increasing, the tension is rising?
Absolutely. And so the nature of the debate and the nature of company statements and actions, how that's actually implemented matters too. So oftentimes you see companies making more broad statements about their support for broader issues, such as women's rights, women's health more broadly. Whereas in other cases, you might see companies making more specific statements pertaining to a very specific issue, such as abortion. The more specific, you know, the statements are, the more likely you are to see kind of a divisive response because of, you know, the specific nature of people's reactions and beliefs about those details. And so, which is perhaps why we're seeing more general statements from companies when it comes to racial and women's rights kind of issues, that very much has to do with trying to avoid backlash to a more detailed and more specific outlining of a company's concrete political stance on a particular point.
And politics and consumer behavior must have always been intertwined. Does it just feel more heated now because we're all connected so much more? I mean, you can take a video of yourself in the Target instead of just writing an op-ed to your newspaper like you would have, you know, 50 years ago.
Absolutely. That's definitely one component of that. A lot of these consumer reactions are more visible now. And it happens to be the case that folks who oppose a particular action through boycotting, they tend to be more vocal and more visible in the media than folks who actually support companies through boycotting. Or it's just a less visible action to, you know, to go buy something as opposed to burn something on social media. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely one component of it. The other is just the growing polarization in political opinions that we've seen over the past several decades. So the Pew Research Center, for example, has been tracking polarization, and they've documented, you know, an increasing polarization over the last 3+ decades in the United States. And that's very much has to do, you know, translates to people's expectations about companies' political actions in the public sphere. So the more polarized we are, the more important, the more salient our political identities are in the as we navigate the world within and outside of politics, and the higher our expectations are when it comes to, you know, the political outcomes and actions that we see in the world around us. And so there's a number of different factors, but definitely polarization, the nature of the media have all contributed to this growing phenomenon. Yes.
And I was reading that some companies are hiring, I guess, consultants to advise them on how to proceed with polarizing topics. You know, which ones should they weigh in on? They're making metrics and they're, you know, to decide, like, should we do the rainbows or not? And, you know, like, is that going to be happening with more companies? Is this a new industry where you can be a consultant to a company and help them figure out which polarizing topic is okay for them?
Oh, for sure. Definitely with the growing, you know, risky terrain that companies are navigating in terms of political opinions, it's definitely a growing opportunity for consultants and PR firms. You know, there have been services related to managing company brand reputation for decades, right? And this is an increasing area of brand risk. So it's very natural to see that being an outcome. At the same time, to the extent that consumers become aware of such efforts, of companies trying to be a bit strategic and kind of intentional in how they put out their political stances and how they manage their political public political personas, the less authentic consumers might perceive these companies to be, and the less kind of credible those political actions on companies' parts might become. A big portion of research in this domain talks about the importance of the authenticity of the brand stance and kind of the history and consistency of a brand on a particular political issue being an important component of, you know, how potent that particular any action will be on the brand's part. And therefore, to the extent that being strategic and intentional might create this perception of inauthenticity or even some inconsistency in brand history on a particular issue, the less credible the brand becomes and the more cost that might be on brand reputation overall. So it's a fine balance in terms of trying not to offend too many people, but also trying to be authentic to what your brand has stood for, you know, for years in consumers' eyes.
Are you saying marketing for big companies are trying to manipulate us? Shocking, right?
Well, on this particular issue, it's a very tricky terrain. So we can't blame companies for trying to be risk averse, but risk consumers averse, are very smart. Absolutely. So with social media, you know, consumers can track what companies put out years ago, right? And so it's much easier for people to actually understand and get to the bottom of what the company really is advocating and what it really stands for. And so it's a much more complicated equation for companies to try and solve. And so bottom line, it's very complicated. And so many things need to be taken into account.
All right. Well, we'll continue talking about this complication, and you're going to be staying with us. We're going to keep talking about the corporations having more pressure placed on them to make political statements about controversial issues as well. We'll be back in just a moment. This is All Sides, and I'm Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Divisions surrounding the support of the LGBTQ community have become the latest cultural touchstone in America, with corporations caught in the crossfire. More pressure is being placed on corporations to make political statements and address controversial issues. Still with us is Nalia Ordabevea, an associate professor of business administration at Dartmouth University, and her research examines how politics interact with consumer behaviors. And we're now joined by Jessica Kriegel, chief scientist of workplace culture for Cultural Partners, to discuss the political dilemma faced by corporate America. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you for having me.
So in the last segment, we were talking about Target. Target is a company that's been dealing with Pride backlash. Target pulled some items out of their Pride collection. They moved displays away from the front of the store to the back of the store. But members of the LGBTQ community felt like that was Target giving in to outspoken conservatives. So is it giving in, or is it protecting their employees? Jessica?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know about, I'm not a political activist, and I'm not someone who knows about consumer habits as my co-guest here, but I can tell you that workplace culture thrives when employees feel that they have psychological safety, when there's clarity of expectations at work, when they feel like they are being invested in. And so the impact that these decisions are having on the employees is of utmost importance, because when you have strong culture, as determined by those factors, you're able to drive results for the business. The problem is that you've got people within the organization, employees, on both sides of the aisle, right? And so what you have is it's a hotbed. It's an opportunity for CEOs and leaders to make people feel excluded. Not just LGBT community members, but anyone may feel excluded if they feel like the environment is not right for them. My advice to the CEOs that we work for is not to engage in the political elements of what social culture is talking about right now. There are plenty of problems to solve in terms of fair compensation and equity practices, creating an environment where people can thrive with leadership and team members that make them feel included. There's so many challenges that CEOs are dealing with, and we don't need to tackle all of them. Not to mention the fact that CEOs are not elected. So we don't want CEOs to speak and be the moral arbiters of ethical decision making for all of us, right? They are to lead the business, and that has a certain purview in which they can stay.
But by Target making a decision to do this and it being called given in, so they are, you know, they're making one group mad despite the other. How do you find the balance? Because, I mean, ultimately, the CEO is in it to keep revenue up?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. So we define culture as experiences that shape beliefs, which then determine the actions people take, and that's going to get you results, right? The experience of moving that the display is going to create a belief for some employees that is wildly different than a belief that other employees might have, right? We can't control the beliefs that get created in the minds of all the employees based on the experiences they have with the decision that we made, but we can interpret those experiences. That's what we coach CEOs to do. Interpret the experience, have a conversation about why the display was moved, what the intention was behind that, because the worst case scenario is that assumptions get made and suddenly now everyone is attacking other people in the organization because of something that may or may not have been on their minds or may have not have been behind the decision that they made.
Let's talk for a minute about Anheuser-Busch and Bud Light. So their marketing team sent a transgender influencer a customized Bud Light, and then the company saw double-digit sales declines in some of their rural red state markets. So the company put the two top marketing executives who did that marketing campaign on leave. What do employers do? I mean, is that they have to do something because they had a double-digit sales decline. So their reaction was to put two employees on leave. What message does that send to their consumers versus their workplace culture?
Well, I think it's up to interpretation. And I think the message was probably intentionally vague because they're navigating a very difficult dynamic with two sides of this aisle that are attacking each other, right? And what we've seen is culture at a global scale is getting much more divisive than it has before. And so it's very tricky to navigate. One thing that we're noticing, and I think the Anheuser-Busch situation really highlighted, is that culture and brand are now merging in a way that they haven't historically. What now, let's say when the tech companies had all of their high profile layoffs, if someone had a negative experience with the way that the layoffs were done, for example, their Slack access was removed in the middle of the night, as opposed to having a conversation, then they go on to social media and they create a video about how frustrated they are about how, you know, my employer did this, that video goes viral, that affects the reputation, the brand that the company has. And so the way that we treat our employees has profound impact on sales. The company also has a responsibility to keep itself profitable, because if it doesn't, it's going to have to let go of another employees, and that's the livelihood of people. And so I think they're doing their best to navigate and figure out a way to create what could be potentially the best win-win that they can get out of a situation that is really created by a bunch of divisiveness that's highly unnecessary.
And that's Jessica Kriegel. She is a consultant who works on workplace culture. And also still with us is Nalia Ordabayeva, an associate professor of business administration at Dartmouth College. So, Nalia, what about that idea of balancing the revenue so you can keep your company afloat versus having to make a reaction? So therefore, you know, putting two employees on leave as a reaction to them making a bad marketing decision. But I mean, I guess that I don't know if it was a bad marketing decision. They were trying to market themselves into new customers. So, Nalia, what do you think about that? How do companies figure out how to balance that?
As Jessica just noted, it's a very complicated dynamic. And to a large extent, it has to do with, you know, who your customers are, right? And so, and whom are you trying to keep? Whom are you trying to attract from kind of a financial and business decision standpoint? In this case, it seems like they were trying to appeal to a new demographic. Their traditional base was more kind of on the traditional side of the aisle, right? And so this was a way for them perhaps to utilize an opportunity to speak to a new customer segment. And one thing that perhaps escaped was the fact that, you know, the majority of their base consists of individuals who, you know, are not as progressive. And as a result of that, you know, you're seeing kind of their traditional customer base react to this new decision. And so from a financial perspective, you know, it depends on who the company is trying to talk to. And it obviously is easier if you don't have a very diverse and very large base where you might have these divisive opinions. So research indicates that for smaller companies, these decisions and these sort of actions are a lot more straightforward. But in the case of these big companies, you know, it depends on, you know, the composition of the different groups that you have in your portfolio. And that might be predictive of how things ultimately shape up in the end. In the case of another big company, Nike, when they spoke up on the issue of racial equity with Colin Kaepernick, in their case, there was big backlash, but because their customer base was predominantly aligned with this particular issue, in the long run, it actually turned out, you know, pretty well for the brand overall. And so it kind of depends on who your customers are and whom you're trying to talk to. And hopefully, you know, from financial standpoint, companies are taking that into account. But at the same time, you know, not being too strategic about that and not, you know, not having that decision-making be so visible, I guess, in the outside world might make for a better kind of outcome in the end, because, you know, when customers sense that you're trying to make these stances and actions based on, you know, business feedback, that tends to be perceived as less authentic in the end as well. And so it's a very fine balance in terms of trying to kind of be intentional and trying to predict how these different things will actually impact your business at the same time as trying to stay authentic.
Right. And I mean, Jessica, you know, a company never knows what's going to stick, what's going to go viral, just like they never know how a marketing campaign will be received. I mean, you know, you spend a lot of money on a Super Bowl commercial. Sometimes it's the hit and sometimes it's the flop. Right. So how does a company balance that idea of trying new things and also keeping it the same?
You know, it's interesting because Anheuser-Busch has thousands of marketing campaigns that they're sending out in
right,
a year.
Right, they have had so many successful Super Bowl ads.
Yeah, and this was one of thousands, and it's the one that happened to catch and get a lot of attention. And in the same way, we have in any given day, as an employee, as you, an employee at this station, right? You have thousands of experiences every day. Experiences when you get a text, when you get an email, when you have a chat in the hallway, when you have a town hall in your company. Those are all experiences that over time, at that level of frequency, start to shape beliefs about the work that you're doing. If you care about the work, if they care about you, if there's meaning in the work that you're doing, if you are psychologically safe, if you understand what we're all doing together here, if your employees have your back or not. And so this is, you know, sometimes we have an experience that goes against the norm, right? And then that creates a negative belief, and we need people to help interpret those beliefs with us to get us through this. In the situation where we're talking about the brand and the consumer, we can't really interpret those experiences as well. We don't have as much control over the consumer experience and access to the consumer in that way. But innovation is all about failing fast. Right? We try things, we experiment, and if we fail, we move on. And if we don't fail, we keep going. That's part of the nature of business.
Well, and the world just moves so fast. So, you know, you could have something that failed, but it could get, you know, lost in the shuffle of other breaking news, right? So it just depends on the timing, really.
Exactly.
Yeah. Jessica, how do you advise companies on There are so many issues. I mean, we're talking about Pride because this is Pride Month, and that was what was related with Bud Light and with Target. But there's immigration, there's voting access, abortion, racial equity, gun rights. I mean, there's so many different issues. What do you tell a company? I mean, I'm guessing you don't tell them, you know, tackle them all at the same time. Go.
No, I mean, I actually tell them to avoid trying to tackle social issues that aren't relevant to the business, because even though there is pressure to do so from shareholders, because it's a distraction. And there's plenty of political commentators and media members who will do that for them. The CEO's role is not that. The CEO's role is to create action in the business towards a goal and to help employees create purpose in the work that they're doing. So we really focus on three elements of the workplace. It's the purpose. Why are we here? Because we all love having meaning in the work that we're doing. The strategy, which is how we're going to go about doing the work we're doing, and the culture, which is the way we do it together. That should be the sole three areas of focus for a CEO. And in fact, we just released research that when you have those three things aligned, you can drive 40% more revenue growth over the course of years than companies who didn't have those three things aligned. So that's a challenge and a half. You don't need to also tackle social issues.
So Nalia, what about that idea of social issues? How does a company decide which social issues are relevant to their business?
To the extent that they can actually make a difference in when speaking out on the issue or taking a particular action or stance on an issue, that is part of whether or not that issue is relevant. So as an example, at some point CVS decided to discontinue all tobacco cigarette-related items from their stores. And this was received very positively by consumers, because consumers strongly believed, rightfully so, that the company could make a big difference through this action and could actually have a tangible impact on consumer health. And so to the extent that your action can actually make a difference in a particular issue, that will be appreciated by consumers. And what Jessica was saying is very much backed up by consumer research as well, indicating that issues that companies have direct relevant impact on, right, issues that are directly relevant to their business, such as worker conditions, wages, those things tend to be less divisive. And those things tend to bring consumers on the left and right side of the aisle supportive of company actions. And so to the extent that you can actually make relevant difference in these domains that are directly related to your company, company's kind of domain actions and their business, consumers will come along as well. And so the more issues get removed from the direct business, right, of the company, the less and less consumers are supportive of that particular stance, and the more divisive those actions tend to be from consumers' perspective. And so very much so staying relevant within the business domain that can make a difference on a particular issue, those are very much the points that can benefit companies.
And Jessica, what do you think about that, with that companies deciding what's relevant to their business? Because this year, subtracting out this year, rainbows have been everywhere in June. All the companies want to have something with a rainbow. To an extent, it's been called rainbow washing, where companies just say, yes, us too, I'm going to throw a rainbow here and we support. Is that because, the workplace culture, the employees expect their company to do something with involving a rainbow? Is that what do you think of that?
No, I don't think it's the employee expectations. Mm-hmm. I think it has to do with consumer expectations. Employees, I think many employees appreciate the safety that the workplace creates in many of these issues. The workplace is a bubble in which it's pretty well known that you don't talk about politics, you don't talk about religion. And while that can create a bit of a disconnect between employees, because that's a big part of our lives, it also really prevents us from getting into these hot topics that create friction, because it allows us to stay focused on the work that we're doing. And so, interestingly, in our research, we recently found that the alignment that you have of your culture with the purpose of the organization will drive revenue over the long term. And in the example that you just shared about CVS, there.
Oh, and I think Jessica froze. Oh, there you go, Jessica. Start with the example of CVS.
Yeah, and the example of CVS, their purpose was all about supporting, protecting, and saving lives. And that's why they made the decision on the cigarettes. They were actually chewed up by Wall Street because it was a strong revenue producer. In the long term, it helped, right? In the long term, the organization sustained. That's because they were making a decision that was about the long-term purpose of the organization, not the short-term revenue for that quarter. And that's really the key for CEOs, is keep your eye on the long term, not on the short term, which is hard with Wall Street.
And so, Jessica, just to end, if you were the consultant for Target, what would you tell them to do next June for next Pride?
I would tell them to interpret the experiences that they are having, that they are creating for their employees explicitly, to not allow what their actions are to be interpreted without some conversation, without a written communication, to give people fair warning in advance of what the plan will be, and make sure employees understand why leaders are making the decisions they're making.
And we have been talking with Nalia Ordabayeva, an associate professor of business administration at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And also Jessica Kriegel, the chief scientist of workplace culture for Cultural Partners, which is a California-based leadership and management consulting company. Thanks for joining us today on All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to talk about local Pride celebrations and how corporations are working with Pride right here in Columbus in just a moment. We'll be back after this break. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Pride Month is meant to be full of celebration, but lately it has come mired in controversy. The LGBTQ community is currently at the forefront of America's culture war. Corporate campaigns supporting Pride, such as the Pride Collection at Target, are becoming controversial, with many right-wing consumers and figures boycotting companies that show their support toward the community. Joining us now is Denzel Porteous, the Executive Director of Stonewall Columbus, to discuss LGBTQ communities and their relationships with corporations. Welcome back, Denzel.
Oh, thank you. So glad to be here.
And people make jokes about the onslaught of the number of rainbows we see in June, right? Everyone wants to have a rainbow on everything in June. But there's been backlash towards certain companies about some of their rainbow products. So what is your response to this? What do you think of that?
The rainbow month of June, when everything becomes rainbow, it's a lovely moment. Rainbows are beautiful. But I think the intentionality behind it in terms of being able to uplift and make space for the queer community is really what it's all about. I think as we are seeing some companies and corporations receive backlash from not only their team members and associates, but also the general public, the thing I say is hold strong to your values, hold firm to what you believe in. If you started down that path of acceptance and making space for others, you should probably just still continue down that path.
Do you think that there has been too much with the rainbows? Do you think it's become rainbow washing? Do you think some companies are just doing the rainbows, but they don't actually, they're not invested in the community?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think there are definitely those companies that are leaning into the moment and leveraging the month to monopolize on a target population. Just the other day, I was speaking with someone. I said, the term DINK, dual income, no kids, came from the queer population. So I think as a marketing tactic, it's something that we see and we understand, or we should understand, because that's ultimately what the world is all about, right? It's a lot of messaging and marketing and getting people to pay attention. And during the month of June, a number of corporations do that. One of the things we talk a lot about at Stonewall and in my own personal philosophy is trying to change that sort of monthly or momentary thing to something that's more 365. Not always having to have a rainbow logo, mm-hmm. But always walking the rainbow walk.
Mm. Do you think that what has happened with Bud Light, we spoke in the last two segments a lot about Bud Light and Target being the two mm-hmm. that have been in the news a lot. Has that shifted the mood of Pride Month at all for you?
You know, I, I think from the seat I sit in and the way that I've sort of always looked at how we are able to, or I should say social and nonprofit organizations are able to leverage the investments of corporations like Target and Bud Light, it doesn't change my mood any. I think what we have to be able to do is to educate the community in the ways that corporations like Target and Big Lot, Target and Bud Light are investing in our communities. Bud Light has been one of the longest supporters of Stonewall Columbus Pride events here in our area. They were supporting us well before a lot of our big corporations have, and they still continue to support us. And I think what we see in the relationship with them is sort of the sustained commitment, maybe not publicly as they should, right? I think, again, stay firm in your values in public, but they have not backed down in their support of Stonewall Columbus. They have not backed down in their commitment to ensuring that we have the resources to do what we need to do to be able to make space for the community. A similar space with Target. We have been in partnership with Target for the last couple of years. They have been able to uplift our programming and what we do at the center, and then are able to reinvest that money into our community. I think when we talk about partnership and relationships, there's a certain level of accountability that we start to step into. And so they are investing in our community. And because we believe in the work that they're doing as corporations, we have an opportunity to hold them accountable and say, hey, you're not doing the best thing right now. And so let's talk about it, right? Let's give you some education to say, this is how you could do better in the future. I'm not a scorched earth kind of person just yet, right? I think I want to make sure that we are being thoughtful and intentional. I think I heard you in the last sort of segment, one of the speakers was talking about, ultimately, people just want to be informed about why a decision is made. Mm. And so I think if we have the opportunity, our corporate partners have the opportunity, we as social nonprofits have the opportunity to talk about why we made decisions, why we decided to stay in partnership or working with certain companies, I think, hopefully people will understand. The space to talk about things is ultimately what we're looking for, too.
So with what has happened with Target and Bud Light, have you seen any companies that you have been associated with in the past? Have they pulled back their support or said that they don't want their logo on something? Like, we'll still give you the money, but just don't put our logo up there?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I mean, I think many of the companies, if anything, we've seen an increase in support this particular year. I think a lot of our corporate partners understand that we are in difficult political times, the work that we are doing as a LGBTQ nonprofit making space for queer community is under attack. And so we're seeing actually a lot of our corporate partners step up in ways they have never done before.
We're talking with Denzel Porteous, the executive director of Stonewall Columbus, about Pride Month and about corporations who are supporting it and some of the backlash some corporations have seen. Have you seen any local, can you talk about some of the local companies who support Pride here in Columbus? And have they had conversations with you about being worried about becoming a smaller version of the Target story?
Oddly enough, we haven't heard that from our partners. And I think that's partly because of the conversation that we're having with them when we're talking about Pride and changing that idea of it being 365. Mm-hmm. Our partners understand that when they invest with us, they're not just going to see us in June, mm-hmm. that we're going to be knocking on their doors in July, August, September, October, November, December. Our partners are our partners. It becomes a relationship that of sustainability that if we need something from them, we can call them. And if they need something from us, they can call us. Diversity, inclusion, all of these things that sort of these buzzwords that we use, they're not sort of one-time sort of flash pan things. We see them as a steady drumbeat of engagement and community building. When I think about, Abercrombie & Fitch or Bath & Body Works or, any of these sort of these companies that are stable in our community that support and invest in Stonewall, we have conversations with them all the time. We're going to their campuses, talking about education for their employee resource groups. We are presenting to their executive level sponsors of some of their ERGs. We're presenting to their executives, and taking space to make sure that they understand that there's a diversity in their community that's essential to their organization thriving. Making space for community members is also making space for their associates.
Do you have some corporations who do just sponsor you in June that just come in for the Pride events?
those are usually a lot of the smaller mom and pop shops locally that may not have the same economic resources that some of our larger corporate partners have. And so those companies may come in for the month so that they can, you know, get a little bit of attention to let people know that we are supportive. But their conversations may not be as sort of a steady drumbeat throughout the year. That doesn't mean that we don't hear from them, but the engagement may be slightly different in the month of June.
If we come to one of your Pride events that is happening next weekend or in later this month, which corporations are we going to see on the signs? Who are you partnering with the most this year?
Yeah, well, that, you know,
you don't have a list. It's okay.
No. It's actually a beautiful and wonderful thing, because as I think about it, this year we have over 100 and I think 6 different companies and organizations who are partnering with us as sponsors of our Pride 365. And that's, as small as companies as, mom and pop shops who have been around for 25, 30 years, and their clientele may not be, they're not a Fortune 500 company, but we have companies like AEP as our premier sponsor this year. SDG Security is an affinity sponsor for us. So it goes as large as you can probably imagine with, sponsors like Nationwide being there and being a part of it. I think that's the beauty of the Pride celebration and the Pride moment here in Columbus, is that we, again, try to make space for as many people as we can who want to be supportive of the community, but then also have that conversation with them, letting them know that your funds are not being leveraged singularly for, a festival or a march. Your funds are being invested into the programs and operations of, an LGBTQ center in the 14th largest city in the country. We're making space for a variety of identities. And I think that's something that I think our corporate partners really appreciate. Is that they see the investment that they're making and commitment to the community going further than just, a festival in March, that they're seeing community members are getting connected to resources and services that they need.
Are you hearing from people that they're upset with Target for moving the displays and removing some items? Do they feel like that it was giving in?
Most definitely. And of course, everyone has an opinion. I mean, I think that's why we're human. We have opportunity to think about these things and express our feelings, and as they should. Our community is sort of on a spectrum like any other community, where there are people who understand or can empathize with why Target made the decision to do what they did. And then there are community members who see it as backing down from what they believe in and what they stand for. I think we, Stonewall, myself, we sit in a space somewhere in the middle where it's appropriate for us to educate people on both sides so that we can, of course, work towards the best solution for our community.
So we are Columbus, which is a different city than the state we're in, Ohio, right? So U.S. Senator J.D. Vance weighed in saying that Target decided to wage war on a large share of its customer base and that he would no longer shop at the store. So LGBTQ and trans rights are under attack by Republican-led lawmakers across the U.S. and here in Ohio. How do you see that, fanning the flame, so to speak, having lawmakers speaking out like that? J.D. Vance saying he won't go to a Target.
Yeah, that's sort of the world in which we exist these days, right? Everyone is an influencer, and here he is influencing a space that he shouldn't be existing in. I think it's our politicians' responsibility to legislate and not sort of share their opinions about whether or not a company is doing something appropriately, unless that legislation is impacting, or what they're doing is impacting some legislation somewhere. I think it's incredibly disheartening to think that anyone in any elected seat or who thinks they should be in an elected seat would have the audacity to not make space for diversity and inclusion, or just simply inclusion in all of its correct and appropriate forms. Target made a decision. They did what they did. Community can say we agree or we don't agree. But I think when someone who is in such a position of power and influence starts to fan the flames as he has, it becomes more a politicized moment than any real social opportunity to make a difference.
With some of the events you have coming up, do you have any concerns about the changing attitudes and this, this political climate ruining any of your celebrating?
The LGBTQ community, the queer community, has been attacked and affronted for so long. I don't think this will dampen our celebration. I think that this is a moment in time where we will move past, as we have so many times before. If anything, I hope this is a moment where, as a community, we are able to rally around each other and come together in a moment where we're seeing, you know, over 540 different pieces of anti-LGBTQ legislation proposed, where we're seeing some of the worst attacks in history on our trans community members. So I think, if anything, I'm hoping, my hope is that this moment really brings our community, our diverse intersectional queer community together in a much stronger way.
So we're down to our last 90 seconds, and I want to give you time to talk about what you have coming up. So what would you like to tell our listeners to check out, visit, just experience?
You know, it's a joyous moment to be able to celebrate with, you know, a couple hundred thousand of our friends next weekend, the 16th and 17th here in Columbus, in Goodell Park. On the 16th and 17th, we'll have the Columbus Pride Festival with over 200 different resource vendors there for people to come and connect with. We'll have a wellness area. And then on the 17th, we'll have our march that kicks off at 10:30 in the morning. It's a 2-mile march downtown straight into Goodell. We have a sizable contingent of marchers currently registered. About 17,000 people will be joining us in our march this year. It's a tremendous moment to see how that shifted from 200 people in 1981, you know, with bags over their head. And now here we are in Columbus, the 14th largest city in the country, welcoming over 700,000 people for a celebration. It's pretty awesome.
Well, I wish you good luck with all of your events.
Thank you so much.
And I thank you so much for being here.
We've
been talking with the executive director of Stonewall Columbus, Denzel Porteous. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening to All Sides today. I'm Amy Jarovich. This is 89.7 NPR News.